The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, our webcast and podcast. I'm Lauren Rublin, Senior Managing Editor of Barron's. Thanks for joining us today. After a week of gains, Wall Street seems to be taking a breather, with stocks down modestly across the board. Bitcoin is flat, however, following a dreadful drop this past weekend, which saw the high-flying cryptocurrency lose about 15%. Joining me on today's call are Barron's Deputy Editor Ben Levison, who will preview some of this week's coming market attractions, and Jamie Quayer, a portfolio manager at Buffalo Funds and manager of the $1.3 billion Buffalo Small Cap Fund. The ticker is BUFSX. Small cap stocks were on a tear from November through mid-March, and there are many reasons to think the party isn't over yet for these often underfollowed names. That's a bet that Barron's is making with the recent relaunch of our Sizing Up Small Caps column, and it's something Jamie also believes. Today, he'll talk about the outlook for small caps generally and share a few of his favorite names. Please remember to send us questions during the call. So welcome, Ben and Jamie. Glad to have you both on Barron's Live today.
Thanks, Lauren. Good to be here.
So before we take a deep dive into this week's earnings reports and economic data, let's get Jamie's read on the market. Stocks have had a good year so far, bolstered by ultra-low interest rates and expectations for a robust economic recovery. What do you see, Jamie, when you look in your crystal ball?
Yeah, I'm still very positive on the market. Like you mentioned, we've got a lot of fiscal and monetary stimulus right now with actually more on the way. Fed seems to be in no hurry to raise rates. The economy's accelerating. For those companies that, you know, really hurt by COVID, you've got some very easy compares coming up. And so, you know, we should have some pretty good earnings reports going forward. So I continue to be positive.
And that's across the board, not merely small caps.
That's correct.
So let's talk about small caps a bit. They tend to rise and fall in multi-year cycles. Where do you think we are now in the small cap cycle?
I think we're actually very early in a cycle. If you kind of think about small caps as a whole, they tend to do pretty well coming out of recessions or weaker periods in the market. Certainly that's the case that we saw last year. Part of the things that, you know, really attract investors to them is that they have very high operating leverage, certainly more so than large caps. So when you see accelerating GDP, it gives you a lot better earnings growth as the top line accelerates, as they see that margin expansion. You know, we've actually gone back and taken a look at cycles overall for small cap. And, you know, going back to the 1930s, we think there's been seven prior cycles, you know, prior to the one that we're seeing right now, which is probably going to be the eighth. You know, the average length of those cycles, it's been 6 years. And the average annualized excess return that we've seen during those cycles has been pretty large. So think about, you know, 32.5% type of average annualized return from small caps versus, you know, about a 16.3% that you've seen at a large cap. So it generally sets up as a really good environment for small caps to outperform large cap. And, like I said, I think we're only about a year into this cycle.
And I'm feeling pretty good that we relaunched our small caps column. So what typically ends a small cap cycle?
Typically, I think they just kind of, you know, die out a little bit over time. Certainly, they'll start to have a period where large caps, you know, will take a lead after that. If you think about, you know, 2015 to 2019, where small caps really kind of start to underperform, we were getting late in the economic cycle. And like I said, these are early cycle names you want to own at the right time of the cycle. So generally, it's just kind of, I think, more time. And, you know, when we have periods where most investors feel like we're late in the cycle and they have much less juice to them.
So we're going to get to some of your favorite small cap names later in this call, but I'm curious, what are some of your favorite investment themes within the small cap sector?
Yeah, there's we invest our process, you know, really according to trends that we think are going to provide a positive backdrop for the stocks that we invest in. My favorite trend over the last few years, and I think it's even accelerated over the past 1 year, is in the increasing demand for communications bandwidth. I think we're very early in a multi-year cyclical upturn in communication spending, which is going to be great for, you know, communications equipment, optical systems and components, wireless equipment, and even communication semiconductors. The reason why is certainly we got a bump from COVID last year as more people were working from home and schooling from home, so they needed more capacity to be added in broadband to homes rather than enterprises. We started to see a few smaller carriers pick up their spending, but the larger ones like Verizon, AT&T really haven't started to make that spend yet. But there are definitely some showing some signs that their CapEx budgets are increasing. You know, some of this is due to increased wireless spending around 5G. And just a couple of weeks ago, Verizon actually came out and said they're going to add an additional $10 billion in CapEx over the next 3 years on top of what they normally spend. In order to monetize some of the recent spectrum that they just bought. The competitive environment's heating up pretty dramatically, you know, because 5G is coming out. So if you're a wireline broadband provider already and you've got 5G coming into their markets, well, you really have to make sure that you have increased capacity in order to compete with what's being offered with 5G. Not only that, the regulatory environment is very positive. You've seen within Biden's infrastructure bill, $100 billion targeted to reduce that digital divide and offer broadband to, you know, lower income customers in more rural areas. Plus, there's some good funding vehicles from the SEC that are going to start, you know, towards the middle of this year. There's one that's going to be about $20 billion spent over the next 10 years. And finally, just the competitive environment is outstanding. You know, due to political pressure, there's obviously a large Chinese equipment provider everyone's heard of, Huawei, is getting displaced in several areas, including the UK, Australia, and India. And I generally think about them having about a 20% share in optical, wireless, and apps and access networks. So they've also been a price aggressor, and taking them out of the equation, I think, is really going to help pricing overall. So a lot of different reasons, but I'm really excited about that communications bandwidth trend.
All right, we will come back to that. That does sound pretty exciting. So I want to turn for a moment to this week's earnings reports. Last week, the banks kicked off earnings season. This week, we're going to hear from a raft of blue chip consumer companies like Philip Morris and Procter & Gamble. We'll hear from some tech companies and some drug companies. So Ben, tell us what's on the horizon. Why don't we start with the consumer staples sector?
Yeah, the staples actually got us kicked off this week with Coca-Cola reporting this morning, and they reported better than expected earnings, 55 cents, I believe it was, over 50 cent consensus, and the stock is up on a pretty lousy day for the market. It also said it's going to be IPOing its African bottling business. But I guess the biggest surprise there was that the organic earnings were actually much better than expected. And that's based on COVID-related restrictions coming down. People forget that Coke is kind of a reopening play because so much of its sales come from restaurants. But that also people are using more of their products at home. So it's doing pretty well. And now we're going to turn our attention to other staples reporting this week. We have Philip Morris, we have Procter & Gamble. And I mean, one thing I should say about all these, regardless of the earnings, is just they all pay really nice yields, with Coca-Cola having a yield over 3%. Philip Morris is at 6.6%. They're actually, people are pretty bullish on Philip Morris. Stiefel was saying that the stocks are doing better, but they're still a lot cheaper than they normally are. But they're also benefiting just from having better fundamental growth in the near term. And so when it reports on Tuesday, the market will be looking for $1.40 a share, and that'll be up from $1.21 last year on sales of $7.3 billion. One of the things in focus with its with Philip Morris is the IQOS, I believe is how it's pronounced. It's the heated tobacco system that it has, which is supposed to be a really good smokeless alternative, if you can call any smokeless alternative good. And then you have Procter & Gamble. It's supposed to have earnings of $1.20. That would be up from $1.17 a share last year. It's going to have tough comparisons. I mean, this was the time that everyone was buying cleaning products. JP Morgan, though, isn't actually worried. They do think that you're going to have a deceleration in things like paper towel and toilet paper. The sales won't be the same there. But because of the reopening, there's a reopening component to Procter & Gamble as well, from beauty products, deodorants, and things like that that people are going to probably want more of as they start heading out more often.
I don't want to think about people not using deodorant at home.
Yeah, I know. It's that one's a little frightening to me as well.
Right. All right. We also have some big tech companies reporting. We've got IBM today. We've got Netflix tomorrow. What's ahead for tech?
These are going to be interesting. I mean, tech has not had a great time last few months. Netflix, for instance, it's up 9.9% over a three-month period, which isn't all that great compared to the market. And the stock, if you look at the chart, has been going kind of sideways. And so people there are really looking to see, can they drive subscriber growth, or where will subscriber growth settle? Because it had such amazing growth during the first months of the pandemic, and now it's slowing for obvious reasons. But there is a lot of worry heading into this number that they're just not going to, that we're not going to see that yet. One of the problem cited by Credit Suisse is that you didn't have any what they call viral titles. They had good shows, but not great shows. And they're going to have some others that are coming in the second half of the year, like The Witcher season 2 is coming, and they're going to have some new shows like Shadow and Bone, but they're also competing against shows like Tiger King. So it could be tough for them, not only this quarter, but also in the quarters ahead. So Credit Suisse, at least, is taking a little more cautious view there. And then, of course, we have IBM and Intel. IBM is in the midst of this. It's merged with Red Hat. It's going to spin off some businesses as it tries to really focus their business on the cloud. And everyone's going to, I think, more important than the earnings themselves. The earnings are supposed to come in at $1.62 a share. That would be down from $1.84. Is really going to be how the split is going, how the Red Hat business is going, and can it cover for the slowdown in IBM's core businesses? And then there's Intel, which reports on Thursday, and Intel is it's just been a mess until recently. Has a new CEO now who's really focusing on trying to fix the problems there. It's going to be spending money to build a fab here in the United States in Arizona. And so spending might go up, but they also could have positive data on or positive numbers from data centers and from the Chromebook business. And so I think that's what people are going to be watching, and to see also how they think the rest of the year is going to go. What's the progress? Are they making progress on sort of catching up with the rest of the chip providers?
So it's quite a diversity of companies. It gives you a sense of how earnings are going across the spectrum. We also are going to hear from some prominent healthcare companies, starting with J&J, which has been in the news, of course, for the past week or two. What's the outlook there?
I mean, J&J is supposed to grow a little bit. It's $2.33 versus $2.30 a year ago. The focus with J&J is obviously on the vaccine. What's interesting is that I don't think J&J ever had the vaccine in its numbers. So it hadn't put them into its forecasts. And so if they don't make much money off of the vaccine, then it probably doesn't mess with analyst forecasts. But obviously there is an optical problem there. And so it'll be interesting to see what they have to say. But actually, there'll be analysts really like to watch Johnson & Johnson, because it's the first of the pharma companies to report. And so they look at, what it says about its vaccine could have an implication for Pfizer, who has and how well its vaccine does. And then we're going to have they're going to be watching it for the over-the-counter business and what that means for companies like Perrigo. And of course, then there's still the overhang from opioid litigation and where that's going. So there's just a lot of stuff going on there.
It's kind of a bellwether for the whole industry.
It really is.
Yeah. We're also going to hear from Biogen, which, of course, has an Alzheimer's drug it's been seeking approval for. What's the outlook for Biogen?
Biogen is almost, it feels so binary. It has this Alzheimer's drug. It may or may not work. the FDA may approve it anyway. And if it does, it's going to be a big opportunity for the company. And, you know, the stock is down 21% over the last 12 months because the risks of this Alzheimer's drug. Jefferies actually came out with a note today saying that it might have the best risk reward among large caps because it has two drugs that are kind of in limbo right now. One is depression, one is this Alzheimer's drug. If they work, there's 85% upside. They don't work, they think that the current businesses put a floor into the stock, that it's not going to fall a lot more. But that's really what investors want to hear is what do they think is going to happen with this Alzheimer's drug?
Yeah, that's been a big problem for the market to try to figure out for a long time. So I want to go through one more earnings report and then we'll head back to Jamie for a moment. Freeport-McMoRan, the metals producer, is expected to report this week. Metals have been red hot, so to speak. What's the outlook for Freeport?
It depends what you think is going to happen to copper. See, the stock has just it's gone up. It's 374% in the last 12 months.
That's all.
25% in the last three. And this is with copper at $4. And so, you know, $4 copper really makes these stocks look good. And you could tell that just looking at the earnings. Freeport's supposed to report a profit of 51 cents a share. And that's against a loss of 18 cents a share a year ago when nobody, you know, the world was felt like it was coming to an end. And Citigroup basically comes out and says that, you know, the multiples on these stocks are basically where you would expect to see them in mid-cycle, not in early cycle. What they basically say is that you either believe that copper is going higher or you don't. And if you believe it's going higher, then Freeport is a great stock. If you don't think it can go much higher, then it's not. And so the focus has to be on copper. You know, it does feel like that there could be more upside in copper, simply just because of everything that's happening in like electric vehicles and all the other things that we would need copper for. And there hasn't been the same kind of building out of the infrastructure to mine it in recent years. So there could be more upside. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Well, economic growth in general is good for the copper market.
That it is.
So you'd expect some further gains there. Thanks a lot, Ben. That was a great summation of this week's earnings report. I want to circle back to Jamie to talk about some individual stocks. But before I do, I'd like to remind listeners we will take questions about stocks and the market at the end of the call. So please type in your questions. So, Jamie, you mentioned a bunch of attractive small cap stocks when we were talking last week, and I had to confess that I didn't recognize a single name. So that's partly because the small cap market is fairly underfollowed compared to some of the stocks Ben just discussed, and therefore it must be somewhat inefficiently priced as well. So tell us about some of the stocks that you find particularly promising. You can educate us about these names we don't know.
Sure. Well, you know, as I just mentioned about kind of communications bandwidth, one of my favorite names within that group is a company called Adtran. It's a $900 million market cap company. They provide broadband access equipment for both large and small carriers. A lot of their kind of smaller size service providers, like I mentioned, are out there, you know, starting to spend more money. There's a lot of these carriers that still haven't upgraded their last mile delivery from copper to more fiber, which is what we've seen obviously in more urban areas and in suburban areas as well. So there's a lot more spend to go for Adtran in there. You know, the knock on them overall has been, you know, customer concentration. They've had some issues before. They've got some pretty large carrier customers, people like CenturyLink, British Telecom, Deutsche Telekom, Telmex. But those companies actually haven't been spending much over the past, you know, 6 to 12 months, and they actually didn't show up much at all in Q4, but they were still managed to post some really solid growth throughout the, you know, the back half of 2020, and we're starting to see those big customers spend again. So I think they're going to provide some upside going forward from those carriers. They've already talked about three big RFPs that they've won from these bigger customers that are going to start ramping in the next few months, and another 6 to 8 more RFPs out there. So I think demand is really solid. And also the stock really kind of hasn't kept up with its peers. The valuation is very, very attractive right now. It's 1.5 times on EV to sales on 2021. And some of their peers, like a Cambium or a Calyx, are trading at 4.7 times. So I think they've got some valuation catch up to do. And I really like that stock. The balance sheet's in great shape too. $63 million in cash, no debt. Operating margins are a little bit low, but I think they're going to show some really good operating leverage as the top line recovers.
And what's the ticker?
That's ADTN.
Adtran. That's correct. An interesting story and certainly undervalued. What are some other stocks that you find particularly attractive?
Well, Bandwidth is one that I like right here. And the ticker on that is BAND, B-A-N-D. It's been kind of, it actually had a decent year last year because it was a COVID winner that's really sold off here lately. People have been rotating to stocks that really kind of be going to be more reopening plays. They're a communications platform as a service company. So you probably heard of companies like Twilio, but these guys do a lot more in voice, where Twilio does a lot more in messaging. They have their own IP network and they carry traffic for a lot of the, you know, the cloud-based voice carriers that are really starting to gain a lot of shares. So think people like RingCentral, you know, Microsoft, Skype for Business. They actually even do for Zoom the audio calls. If you have your web conference call, if you dial in over phone rather than through the internet. They made a really big acquisition last year to get them into international markets. They were going to try and go to loan, but they ended up finding a good company to buy. And I think the revenue synergies they're going to find from this acquisition are really going to surprise people. So, you know, despite having these tough compares for a couple of quarters, I think if you're a long-term investor, this is going to give you, or it has given you, a really good entry point. And again, the multiple on this one, I think, is very attractive on both a relative and an absolute basis. At the 131 it is right now, it's trading at 6.2 times 2022 revenues. And again, this is a peer group. It kind of tends to trade against the software as a service companies and even the other names like Twilio. A lot of those are trading about 20 times revenue. RingCentral's at 16.4 times revenue. So this one's dramatically cheaper. You know, the margins, they're decent. They were about 7.5% last year. They're investing a little bit more on integrating the acquisition, so they're going to come down a touch. But I think long term, they've got some really good opportunities to expand their margins.
And again, the company is Bandwidth and the ticker is BAND.
Correct.
You mentioned a cybersecurity company to me last week, Tenable, which I thought was pretty interesting. It's certainly a hot area. Tell us what the attraction is there.
Sure. So Tenable, they're a leader in a market called vulnerability management. So this is software used to really find holes in your network where, you know, enterprises could be vulnerable. It's being used a lot more in different areas as we get more and more devices connected to the internet. And as we see things like, you know, HVAC systems or automation equipment also being connected to the internet, it's just more and more opportunities for Tenable to continue to expand their software across their install base. You know, it's cybersecurity as a whole as it continues to be a great space and, you know, top priority in IT spending, especially we've seen some really high profile attacks like the SolarWinds hack that was reported at the end of last year.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're taking share from their competitors. Their main competitor is a company called Qualys. They've really been underinvesting relative to Tenable. And I think they've just really lost focus on that core vulnerability management market. So their margins have been improving. Gross margins are very high at 84%. They moved to profitability last year on a non-GAAP basis. You know, right now, I think they've got an operating margin of about 6%, and that's expanding. And I think long-term, you could get that to 20%. So it's a 20% grower. Valuation's very attractive. They've got high recurring revenue. This trades at 6.2 times 22 revs. And again, I think this is a best compare against the SaaS group, the software as a service group. As I mentioned, some of those are trading in the low to mid teens, and the balance sheet's in solid shape here too.
So you've been mentioning multiples of sales, and I'm curious, do any of these companies have earnings?
They do. Again, if you have a kind of low operating margin or low EBITDA margin that's expanding, it's tough to, you know, to make those valuation arguments just yes, because they're under earning on the margin side. But like I mentioned, Tenable does have earnings and Bandwidth, you know, they have good EBITDA as well.
All right. How do you define a small cap? I know we've had some debates at Barron's about how large is a small cap. What's your definition?
Right. We define it as under $4 billion. And, you know, at the low end, we'll get involved in names that, you know, really just have to have enough liquidity for us to get involved. Usually that's around a $500 to $600 million type of range. And then once they get to what we kind of deem as more, you know, definitely in mid cap, kind of that $10 to $12 billion, we'll kick the names out and look for smaller opportunities to take their place.
And would you describe yourself as more of a growth investor or more of a value investor or some combination of the two?
Yeah, we definitely have a growth bias. You know, like I mentioned to you last week, I actually, some of my best names, though, have been names that kind of are attracted to both value and growth buyers. So, but I think at heart, we really see ourselves as growth investors. And there's a lot of growth available within small cap. So really good opportunities to find some early stage growth companies that you can ride for a long time.
You mentioned to me that you were active in the area of diagnostics and precision medicine. So what's the investment attraction there? And what are some names you like in that space?
Yeah, we really prefer those diagnostics companies to kind of more drug companies as we look at precision medicine. You know, certainly you have less, you know, clinical binary risk and the cash flow characteristics of these companies are a lot better. But there's some really exciting things that are going on within diagnostics right now. We're going, you know, obviously we've sequenced the human genome 20 years ago, but we're even going beyond that, beyond just genomics and looking things like, you know, proteins and messenger RNA and even kind of a, the adaptive immune response that a body has once pathogens are introduced to even get more granular data and make better decisions for patients. So the tests overall, they're a lot more accurate. They're much less invasive. And ultimately, I think that's going to allow for earlier detection of cancers and autoimmune diseases. And they're even getting used in places like neurology. And by the way, also the reimbursement environment is very good. So these companies are actually able to make good money. Some of them are, you know, investing quite a bit on future growth. So they're many are not profitable, and you have to certainly keep an eye on the balance sheets to make sure that they can cover their burn. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a very early market with very low penetration still. There's some very exciting companies that are coming to market with products that I think they're going to have very high growth going forward.
Can you mention one that you particularly like?
Sure. Castle Biosciences, I think right here, is kind of one of my favorites. It's a $1.6 billion market cap. They do diagnostics in dermatology. So they have a core product that really helps in risk stratification and treatment decisions for patients that have melanomas. In addition to that, they have a couple of new products that are actually being launched right now. One does, you know, kind of the same thing within squamous cell carcinomas, and another one that's used to actually kind of diagnose melanoma or kind of more suspicious lesions. Their TAM is increasing, or their addressable market, pretty nicely because of these new products, up to about $2 billion. And they're selling these to existing customers, so they're already calling on them. They'll have some reimbursement data points that'll come later this year, and I think you're really going to see revenues accelerate from those new products next year. And they have pipelines of products going out to, you know, like 2025. So very thoughtful about how they introduce new products. In terms of their model, you know, they have very high gross margins, about 85%. Like I mentioned on the others, you know, they're burning maybe $10 to $15 million, but you know, they got $400 million on the balance sheet. So they're in great shape. They managed to grow 21% last year, even though COVID impacted as fewer people were going to the dermatologist to get their lesions checked. So I think it's a little bit of a reopening play there too, as, you know, we continue to have more vaccinations. And, you know, given the early stage growth of where this industry is, it's a little bit pricey. This one trades at 11 times 22 revs. But this is a group that I think, you know, really deserves a premium multiple because of the large addressable market and just how early we are in the growth of this market overall.
And what's the ticker?
That is CSTL.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Ben, I heard you starting to ask a question, and I may have cut you off there.
Oh, no, I was just curious about the reimbursement comment that you made, Jamie, that it's easier. Has it gotten easier in recent years to get reimbursement for these kind of tests?
Yeah, it was really kind of in 2018 that CMS kind of really came out and offered a good reimbursement pathway for these. So some of these tests are getting, you know, $2,000 to $4,000 on per test. And, you know, as long as they have enough scale, you can make really good margins on these. And like I mentioned, just a really large addressable market. And so I think the profitability long term on these will be outstanding.
All right. We have a couple of listener questions that ironically have to do with crypto. And Ben, I'm just going to throw it out at you and sure. pass if you don't want to answer. But Samir asks, he's got three questions. Where is crypto taking us? Will the dollar lose value over time? And will gold rise again?
I wish he hits them all there. Yes. And I wish I had a crystal ball. With crypto, I honestly don't know where it's going. We just had a MarketWatch conference where I got to talk to some really smart people about it. And everybody kind of says the same thing, yeah, that it's hard to know. Some see crypto as, if you're buying Bitcoin, it's really you're making a bet on blockchain more than anything. And in some ways, it's strange because if you bought Amazon, you bought Amazon because it was a bet on a company that was changing retail. But if you're buying Bitcoin, it's a step removed from blockchain. And there's also, we just don't have history here in how cryptos have performed or it's almost impossible to know where they're taking us. As for the dollar, I do think that it's probably going to go lower, mainly because it's benefited from being, the strongest country really out there economically for a while, and it has been in a very tight range since about not a tight range but it's been in a range at a pretty high level since 2015. After it breaks lower, you could see it breaking that 2015 level and head lower, but I don't think it would be necessarily a sign of something wrong in the U.S. just that perhaps Europe and other places are starting to see growth that they didn't during the previous the recovery from the Great Recession.
So, Jamie, I know you're a small cap stock manager, but since crypto is in the air and what many people want to know about, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, if you would have asked me this about 2 or 3 years ago, I would have said it's trash and it's probably going to find a lot of regulatory scrutiny and don't touch it. But actually, and again, it was on the huge tear that it was made, I think, in kind of late 17. But now that it's kind of come in, I do see more and more companies that are actually starting to either put it on their balance sheet or think of ways to use it in payments. So I've actually started to warm up to a little bit. I've actually was talking to, one of my analysts over this weekend about a name that I know that kind of has a play on it that we may take a look at. So I'm starting to become more of a believer, but for some of these companies that just put money on their balance sheet and see a huge rise in the stock price, to me, I don't understand that at all.
Jamie, have you been surprised that there hasn't been more, regulatory scrutiny of cryptocurrencies? And I guess, I was thinking of David Einhorn's letter that he released last week, but just scrutiny of trading in penny stocks and things like that that seem to it'd be going without the SEC really taking much notice.
Yeah, I think a few years ago, I was kind of concerned that they were dragging their feet so long in this, especially with ICOs. To me, that just seemed like it would be rife with fraud. I think they're slowly starting to kind of take a look at it a little bit harder. And I think it's probably a smart thing because there's definitely ways that people can get ripped off here and no one wants to see that happen.
All right. Well, thank you both. This has been a really very interesting call. We covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate your joining us today, Jamie, and thanks as always, Ben. That's all the time we have for today, but tomorrow, please join us again when Barron's senior writer Leslie Norton will speak with Jim Copeland, senior fellow and director of legal policy at the Manhattan Institute, and Jonas Krohn, chief advocacy officer at Trillium Asset Management, for a discussion on the outlook for this year's proxy season. Thanks again, Jamie, and thanks, Ben, and our listeners as well. Stay well, everybody, and have a good day.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.